love that this story of turning water into wine comes on a Sunday when we celebrate the sacrament of communion. What better imagery to make our mouths water for this sacred meal than the promise of an abundant supply of the best wine? Here we see gracious hospitality in abundance. The party does not have to end. Let's stay together longer and enjoy what the party has to offer. In the time of Jesus, wine was not just for getting a boozy feeling or for party celebrations. It was a daily, ordinary drink. An anthropologist named Patrick McGovern, who is an expert on ancient fermented beverages, notes that in the wines of ancient times, antioxidants found in the additives and alcohol killed harmful microorganisms, so wine was much safer to drink than raw, unfiltered water. So when the wedding ran out of wine, it is basically like saying that they had run out of anything to drink. People would get thirsty. What are you thirsty for? At a previous church where I worked, I met some thirsty people. I was troubled when I first arrived in that ministry that there was a culture of drinking and drug use among teens in our town. Surveys showed that substance abuse among local teens was twice the national average, and the church kids were not immune to this culture. I sought the advice of the senior pastor at the church, and she advised me to look more deeply at what these kids were hungry and thirsty for. As I listened to the youth, I heard what the power of inclusion meant for them, and how the invitation, such as the invitation to smoke something with a group of kids, felt like a ticket towards acceptance and approval. In a sense, it was an initiation rite that they hoped would help them navigate the complex social world of high school. Once initiated, they found in certain drugs and alcohol a transcendent experience that allowed them to leave behind the enormous pressures from parents and schoolwork. Unfortunately, these sensations were often temporary, and in some cases, what once led to connection ended up in isolation. What once provided transcendence came crashing down into despair. Not for all kids, but for a few. And I found that in our church work with the teens, however, we could foster healthy initiation rituals that offered acceptance and approval and the connection that the kids were craving. I hoped that in teaching spiritual practices with the youth, they would be equipped with ways to find a healthy transcendence. In other words, to discover intimacy with God. Slowly, the culture began to change. Change is hard, as anyone in recovery knows, and it takes renewing commitment to live into the person or group you wish to become. If he had lived, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would have turned 90 last week. But he was shot 50 years ago, as you probably already know. I learned about King when I was in preschool in Atlanta, Georgia, where much of his activism was grounded. And I think it would have been about 12 years after he had been shot and killed. I remember asking my preschool teacher if he would have become president if he had lived. And I don't remember her response, but for some reason my mind retained that question and conversation, while most other things I was told when I was 4 years old have slipped away. As an adult, I can see now that the country had way too much opposition to the radical changes that King encouraged us to dream of racial equality and also of economic justice and peaceful opposition to war, to have ever made it to become president. But there's still something of that four-year-old child in me who imagines that someone as radical as King could lead this country. I believe in the principles of equality, of liberty and justice that were set forth in many of the founding documents of this country. Further, as a Christian, I know my own well-being is tied up in the well-being of my neighbors, even when they are strangers to me. No one is truly free when any one of us is oppressed. King taught that the ultimate tragedy is not the oppression and cruelty by the bad people, but the silence over that by the good people. Today we live in a world where a group of teenage boys harass and mock a Native American Omaha elder who is singing a spiritual song to usher the spirits of the dead to a resting place, which is what happened yesterday. But I'm not as outraged at that act of smug privilege. After all, I have worked for years among some smug and privileged teenagers and have seen that with the right kind of mentoring, they can be transformed into kind and good-hearted people. I'm more concerned about the centuries of treatment of Native lands and Native peoples that has left them in entrenched poverty. And I recognize that I have benefited from that in many ways. It's one thing to change one person's mind toward kindness, but it's another thing to change an entire system that matches prejudice with economic and political power in ways that cement certain groups into poverty and oppression that even the brightest and most self-motivated can rarely escape. To be honest, I feel overwhelmed and anxious about our ability in this country to live up to the dreams that King set before us. I feel overwhelmed and anxious about our ability to live up to the dreams that God has set before us. After all, Martin Luther King was mostly echoing the cause of justice that God shouted through the prophets that God sent. But as a pastor, I work in a role where it's my job to proclaim the impossible. A sea parts so that slaves can cross on dry land into their freedom. A border wall being crumbled to the ground through the power of marching and trumpets, as happened in Jericho. Water turned into wine. Thousands fed from only a few fish and loaves of bread that are shared. Death not being the final word. God's shalom brought here on this earth and in the lives we live, not just in some heaven far, far away. And so, I try to ground myself in the scriptures, to look for the wisdom on what is needed for change. And something I noticed from this gospel passage is that change doesn't happen by Jesus alone. It is a group project that required Jesus, Mary, and many servants. And we can be like Mary and point to the change that needs to happen. Notice Mary's compassion and sensitivity called Jesus' attention to the need at the party. "They have no wine," she said to him when the wine gave out. Even before Jesus' birth, Mary announced changes that needed to happen in her time, the scattering of the proud in the thoughts of their hearts, bringing the powerful down from their thrones, lifting up the lowly, filling the hungry with good things, while showing the rich what emptiness feels like. When Mary points out to Jesus that the wine has run dry, Jesus responds, "Woman, what concern is that to you and me? My hour has not come yet." I imagine Jesus enjoying the party like anyone else would. Maybe he was caught up in someone's story that is filling the room with laughter. Or maybe he knows that the dancing is about to begin. Jesus' initial action reminds me of the shrug I sometimes get when I ask my own child to do something, especially if she's immersed in some other activity. I know that if I press her, she respects me enough, at least for now, to get it done, but often not without showing me a little of her annoyance that I'm taking her from whatever else she's doing, whether she's enjoying a book, spending time in a daydream, playing with a friend, or, let's be honest, watching TV. But Mary has confidence in Jesus' responsiveness to her words, even if he was just a little bit sassy back at her. We do not hear Jesus agree to help with the wine situation. Instead, the next action is Mary directing the serving staff to do whatever Jesus asks of them. Like Mary, we can be the ones to shine a light on the change that needs to happen. We can raise awareness about the experiences of the vulnerable. We can do that by listening to others' experiences so that we know what their lives are like, at least a taste of it. Yesterday, in a speech at the Leonia Women's March, Joanne Terrell spoke about the power of sharing a meal with someone who is different from you. This is what Jesus actually taught and practiced in so much of his ministry, for he knew that there is something about hospitality that changes both the host and the guest and binds them to one another. In most stories of the New Testament, Jesus is the underdog. He wins by losing. Born in a stable, Jesus is God incarnate. Hanging on the cross with a crown of thorns, Jesus is the King of the Jews. Lifeless body sealed in a tomb turns to resurrected glory. There are many times that God works through Jesus' vulnerability and powerlessness to make mighty things happen. However, in this story, Jesus seems to come equipped with the power to make change possible, and his mama knows it. But Jesus seems reluctant to leave what he is doing and use his power to create change. In that sense, we can be like Jesus too. We may see and know something is wrong, but we don't want to leave the party to help create change. There are many of us who have the power to make change. It may be through our business influence or through wealth. It may be through our respect in the community as an active volunteer or a civic leader or an involved parent in the schools. It may be through our choices about how to spend our hard-earned money. The truth is, each of us has the power to make change. I am moved looking at those pictures of young, courageous Black students who took their seats at whites-only lunch counters throughout the South or at the front of the bus. Most of them did not have great wealth. They did not have prestigious jobs. In fact, they had grown up in places where they were constantly given the messages that their voices and their bodies do not matter. And yet, it was their courage and their witness that led the way to some of the biggest changes our country has seen in the last century. If we are true servants to Jesus, we can be like the servants at the wedding party who hustled to fill those stone jars with water up to the brim. Are we ready to be those laborers to act when called upon? Those stone jars were sacred jars used for purification rituals. Notice that they are empty before Jesus performed his miracle. It was the servants who filled the jars with ordinary water, and Jesus transformed them. In communion as well, we are filled with ordinary elements of bread and juice, and yet they transform us to live as holy wine and holy bread. Like most people at the party, Perhaps you have been pretty happy with the food and drink served so far. You have been having such a good time enjoying the people and the music that you did not notice what is being served, whether it is top shelf or not. Perhaps others of you have felt like you were not given the drink or not given the seat at the table and are still waiting for that invitation. But let me assure you, the best is yet to come. And once you taste the transformation Jesus offers, you will find that there is nothing like it and that it is worthy to be shared. The good wine is yet to come. Thanks be to God.